Beasley swings it in. The U.S. go up. What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra.
Boyd will try a long hit. What a goal from Lloyd. This is spectacular. It's hit with no regard for humanity. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is. Switzerland and Shaqiri have scored in the 90th minute. That was worth the price of admission alone.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome in, everybody, on the heels of the Killer Bees and Joel and Jeremy. Appreciate them with the shout-out and promoting our hour here of the best in soccer talk, self-proclaimed. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 is on the air, and as always, presented by the great Daspit Law Firm. Throughout the show, the call-in number is 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. The reason I say you need to keep that number handy is, one, enlighten me. Give me a take tonight on anything soccer-related. The other thing is we're going to give away some Dynamo Portland tickets tonight, next Saturday. I'm not jumping ahead here because we do have another show on Wednesday at 6 o'clock presented by the Daspit Law Firm, but the Dynamo are in action tomorrow night in CONCACAF Champions League lower.com field in Columbus against the defending MLS Cup champions. They're down 1-0 on aggregate. So we'll be talking about that game in the second segment here tonight, as we got a lot to talk about. Producer Guillermo Lazo Romero behind the glass, as always. And I'm going to start off with a little fun little story here, which definitely happens to people in radio and TV on occasion. Certainly it's a little different with me in the world of soccer, but I had a knee surgery, which I mentioned and told that story about falling down. I have not fallen down since. I will call another game on crutches on Saturday, the Dynamo Portland game. But I had one of those machines. Anybody who's had a knee surgery, you get one of these sleeves and a machine that pumps cold water around your knee, and you use it, you know, the first, obviously it's very important the first couple of days for swelling and pain, but, you know, you use it quite a bit, at least I do, when you're laying on a couch and you got your leg up. So they came to pick the machine up here after, I think, 12 days, 14 days. Guy comes in, his name is Jarek Lebecki. Jarek Lebecki, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. So he comes to pick the machine up, and we just casually start talking. You know, he asks, well, what happened? And, you know, I say, well, it's wear and tear from a long time and playing on a poor artificial surface in the 80s. And he says, my father's Polish. He really loved Poland. And so I'm talking about the 74 Polish national team, because when I was a kid, I remember them with Kaz Dana and Gregory Lato and Jarmak and Jan Tomaszewski in goal, if I'm saying his name right. That was the World Cup. West Germany ultimately beat the Netherlands in the final, but Poland had an excellent team. They had those white and red Adidas uniforms. And, you know, that goes down in Polish lore. So anyway, we're talking about it. I find out he knows a lot about soccer. So I end up giving him a couple of tickets to come to the Dynamo game. He did know about the Dynamo Polish player, Sebastian Kowalczyk, who's played very well the first three or four games. And I think he's going to take his father, but just very cool. I hooked him up with a couple of Soccer Matters T-shirts as well. So, yeah, it was just fun. It was a nice conversation because when you're bouncing around a townhome on stairs, in fact, my dog is away with friends as well. So you're just trying to get through the day. But that was a great connection, and I love talking to the soccer fan, and I want to hear from you tonight as well. 713-780-3776. That's just another reminder of all the differing cultures and groups in Houston, Texas, that we have that absolutely love the game of soccer and are engaged in it and helped us get the World Cup. All right, let's get into what is the big one here tonight. We start off with Liverpool, Manchester City. Global eyeballs were on this one. Biggest athletic event of the weekend in the world. It was even bigger than the Savannah Bananas. Although, let me tell you, 41,000 for that? That's pretty unbelievable. Roger Clemens out there and others. It's pretty cool. Liverpool, Manchester City. Starts off Manchester City. We'll go to our sound bites here. In the 23rd minute, this is off a corner now. This is a very interesting moment in this game, and I'll come back and give you my thoughts on it, because you can look at these types of goals both from an attacking standpoint and a defending standpoint. But this is the opening goal, Manchester City, 23rd minute, John Stones, his first goal of the year, by the way.
De Bruyne and Stones! Manchester City are the ones who celebrate. But an inventive corner variation, and the alertest player on the field, John Stones.
So John Stones scores. Liverpool don't defend the near post. Darwin Nunez is back. And you've heard me say this repeatedly over the years on this show. You always have to be concerned with strikers that come back defensively, because for some reason, they're not as into defending corners as they are attacking them. Hey, what a concept, right? He falls asleep. He loses his mark. He gets nudged. But you always see this from strikers. They relax. They might switch off mentally. The near post is wide open. They don't put anybody on the near post or in that space. Ake moves McAllister so the McAllister is kind of extracted from this play. The near post is wide open. The ball still had to be put there. The execution still has to happen, and it's superb. So you can look at it from two perspectives: poorly defended by Liverpool, which I guarantee you Jurgen Klopp is saying, and Manchester City and Pep Guardiola are going, wow, what a beautifully scripted, thoughtful corner kick that we delivered and scored off of. So there you go, offensive and defensive standpoint from these plays. Fascinating to watch the press employed by Liverpool. I will say the field was slick. Eyes of the world were on Anfield. No Mo Salah to start for Liverpool. They did start a lot of their future. Bradley at right back, Kwanzaa at center back, Elliott. I mean, these guys are the future of Liverpool when Klopp leaves at the end of the season. Early control of this match. I think if Manchester City had their shooting boots on, they would have scored goals in the first 3 minutes. Julian Alvarez, Foden had really good chances. Foden, for some reason, didn't get a shot off, but was put in beautifully. But I think they should have scored early. The one thing that I notice about City, and, you know, everybody, oh, what an amazing possession team and all that. But you know what? They are ruthlessly direct when they break down opponents in midfield. So if you employ the press like Liverpool was doing, which I still think is the way to go, if you've got a good press and it's a press that is all together there with everybody involved. But if City breaches your midfield, they're off and running. They're going to goal, and they're ruthless. They're as direct as can be, and that's amplified because they got players who get on the ball and are looking to drive at people and take them on and draw fouls and get into the box and get into the final third and get those final third entries, which, you know, you look at other teams and sometimes guys will pick up a ball and you're watching and you're going, go, take them on, take them on. So what if you lose the ball once or twice? Take them on. And they don't. They hold it up, and they allowed a team to get back behind the ball. And now defensively, your opponent's got structure and balance. They've killed all the space that was there a moment ago. So I love that about City and about teams that really, once they break pressure, man, they just it's amazing to watch. And this was an amazing game. I think this was the best Premier League game of the year. By the way, Bradley in the 13th minute whipped in a good cross. And I don't know if you remember the moment, but Nunez crashed into the far post. But Liverpool, I did think, kind of survived a little bit of a mediocre start as they were trying to employ their press. There's a moment in the first half when Virgil van Dijk is one-on-one with Erling Haaland. And I mean, this was a masterclass of defending. I absolutely loved this. And I hope others did. We all know how great a defender van Dijk is and a leader. And I mean, this guy, he's got everything. If you made the prototype of a center back, it's Virgil van Dijk, right? He's one-on-one with Haaland, and of course, Haaland's got a long stride, and Haaland can run. And if he knocks that ball and runs after it in an open field, and you don't turn quick enough, he's likely going to get there and be in. This play, Virgil van Dijk, with his patience, with his proper negotiation of distance, not being too tight, to Holland. He literally, I think, just takes Holland's brain away from him, and he doesn't really know what to do. And in the end, Van Dijk patiently, you know, gets the job done, and it's a one-on-one that turns into nothing. The depth of his positioning, the length he is away from him, all of this stuff, so vital in a moment like that, in a game like this. But he won the mental battle on this play. It was like Holland, it was almost like he was going to give him the ball back. Yeah, I can't figure you out. It was awesome. Patience exemplified, totally neutered Erling Holland, who, by the way, was a ghost. He wasn't involved. That had a lot to do with Van Dijk. It had a lot to do with Liverpool really dominating what I thought was the second half. That was a rare second half to see City outpossessed, outplayed, tactically outplayed. That said, they still hit two posts, and we'll get to that in a minute. So the second half, we're in there, and City going into it, I wanted to make this one little factoid. Only one time when leading at the half have they lost. So the game changed at the start of the second half. It becomes Liverpool's half, as I mentioned. Akanji with a bad back pass. Ederson, real trouble. Nunez bearing down on him, fouls him. Penalty spot we go. It's the 50th minute. Ederson remains in the game, although he looks hurt at this moment. And the Argentine World Cup winner, McAllister, stepping up here. This is the penalty kick. This is the goal in the 50th minute. Here's what it sounded like. This would equalize the game.
Alexis McAllister. And Anfield comes alive again. A wall of Liverpudlian noise. Animation everywhere you look. And plenty of hope too.
Now that was the big platform to save the second half, to start the second half for Liverpool. Stefan Ortega would then come in to goal. Ederson would take himself out of the game, and the game now changes. Energy is being brought by Liverpool. Holland is, like I said, disappeared. Looks fatigued. He's being marked out of the game. You didn't know he was there. Many times it was weird. I was watching him closely, and he was walking around looking at the ground. It was almost like Erling Holland wanted the game to end. Man, these players, not that they don't always, but man, you just had to marvel at the intense competition here, the desire. You know, this was first and foremost football. This had it all. Chances, tempo, pace, individual moments, collective brilliance, great managers, the backdrop of acoustics, Anfield. The only thing it really lacked was final product and goals, and it ends 1-1, but whew, what a game this was. All right, let's go to Pep Guardiola, the manager of Manchester City, on playing against Liverpool.
It's keep the ball, keep it, and provoke falls, or keep it, but sometimes you can because they are really good. It's the best team I've ever seen in the high pressing and in all the process. So in Etihad Stadium, we were able to do it in the last two games. We were magnificent with our results, but winning and draw this season, but we played really good. He is completely different. We play in Anfield, so the fact that the environment is a reality and the players know it, I know it, and the opponents know it. When we are able to do it, we never try to forget to play. That is what I like. Never try, knowing that sometimes it's difficult.
How about that? He calls Liverpool the best pressing team. And that's another beautiful thing about Guardiola and City. They don't ever change. They have such self-belief in what they do. They did hit two posts in the second half. Doku hit a post in the 73rd. Doku hit a post, and then 73rd, there was a really bizarre play where Alisson comes out. The Liverpool goalkeeper comes out and punches it off Foden, and it hits the crossbar. It was absolutely crazy. Mo Salah entered in the second half. Moments after he gets in, he threads the eye of a needle on a pass. He puts Nunez in. And, you know, Nunez blows the finish. But there again. And then after that, Mo Salah technically did not look sharp as he's working his way back into it. All right, let's hear from Jurgen Klopp, the manager of Liverpool, on their performance and the value in it.
For us, it's important that after all the different ways we found, not always great performance, just highest intense fights to get a result, like Nottingham or whatever, that we can play like this as well. That's the information we need, that we can create something like this today. And our injury situation is still awful. There are many players not available. It's crazy. And they were today all in. I would say you can play that game with only the players who are not available today, so that would have been a good one as well.
Yeah, they had Gakpo, Mo Salah come off the bench. They started at the back with Gomez, Van Dijk, Kwanzaa, Bradley, McAllister, Endo, Szoboszlai, Diaz, Nunez, and Elliot up front. Diaz was a beast just trying to take people on. All right, we'll take a break. By the way, the big winners this weekend, guess who in the Premier League? It was Arsenal, because Arsenal got a stoppage or a late goal from Kai Havertz. We'll hear that when we come back from the break. They win 2-1, and they are at the top of the Premier League, tied with Liverpool, City 1 point below them. So we'll briefly go over that, and then we will get into Houston Dynamo talk. 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. How about right now? Caller number 4, 713-780-3776. You get a pair of tickets. Dynamo Portland Timbers. Timbers coming off a 2-1 win. Want to remind you, this coming weekend we need campers. 2024 Kick Cancer, hosted by United Soccer Club League. Kick Cancer Clinic, March 17th. $50, Dias Park. Go to thedriven.net. Thedriven.net, $50. You get a Capelli T-shirt, printing done by Soccer for All. And it's only $50. It's going to be a great clinic. All the proceeds to the 501c charity, Snowdrop Foundation.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
White. How about?
So this is the legendary Dick Dale, the king of the surf guitar. So that was the game-winning goal. Havertz. Arsenal now sits atop of the English Premier League table, 64 points. Liverpool also on 64, City on 63. All of them have played 28 matches now. Big result was Villa getting smacked by Spurs, and Spurs has jumped up now to 53 points, so pretty interesting. One thing I didn't mention, which I do need to mention, Liverpool were denied a penalty versus Man City at near the end of the game. Doku kind of went up for a ball. It was about chest high on McAllister. We know there's controversy all the time, and VAR was obviously summoned. And the question was, should Liverpool been given a penalty against Man City? And obviously that's subjective. And it's subjective to the VAR and the referee guys, the referee and VAR. So it's the one thing. There's nothing clear cut a lot of times. It really comes down to the person and the VAR team as to if these things are going to be called or not. We had one in MLS also with Messi and a clearance by a defender for Nashville. And he kind of kept a straight leg in there. And a lot of people... Messi shouldn't have tried to tackle. Well, if you played professionally, you also know people leave a straight leg in there sometimes. I knew players that would knock a ball forward on purpose. And, I mean, this is archaic and very rudimentary, and it was very different time with refereeing and stuff. You don't see this as often now, but they'd knock a ball forward off their feet on purpose when they were dribbling to bait somebody in to go into a tackle, and then they go over the top of the ball and try and hurt the guy. Not savory, but fact. Okay, fact. So that's that. All right, I do want a quick word here. You know, we do have the Copa America coming here. It's going to be unbelievable. Tickets are on sale right now. It's a huge international tournament. It's coming to our city. It's returning to the U.S. Remember, it was here before. We had Messi in Argentina visit Energy Stadium. We have three matches. We got Jamaica and Mexico. I mean, this is going to be a taste of the World Cup. come June. And you got Colombia, Paraguay, and then you got potentially Argentina here if they win their group. So we got three amazing matches. This is testament to our soccer city. You get your tickets at Lone Star Sports and Entertainment, LSSE.net. Mexico, Jamaica is going to be good. Jamaica, there's times when Jamaica gives Mexico a really good game. Colombia, Paraguay, as I mentioned, the winner of the FIFA Club World Cup champion, Argentina's group, will come to Houston, as I mentioned. So this is going to be good. And that the knockout game is 4th of July, by the way. So a lot going on. Tickets, information, suites, parking, you get it all. You want to get that World Cup fever a little bit earlier, it comes with the Copa America. LSSE.net. All right. 713-780-3776 is the number. Coming up on the show, got a great conversation, great interview with Sarah Clapson. She's the Nottingham Forest reporter for the Nottingham Post, Nottinghamshire Live. Really interesting interview with her. She's going to give you an update where Gio Reyna is and where Matt Turner is right now. And there's two different things kind of going on there, but they're both not getting the minutes that they would want. Matt Turner now is clearly the number two at Nottingham Forest, and Gio Reyna's only played 38 minutes. This is not about adapting there. He was brought there to help them with a relegation battle, but he does share the same agent as the head coach of Nottingham Forest, Nuno Espirito Santo, who the Wolves fans and the Wolves supporters group in Houston know very well. All right, let's switch our focus here now. The Houston Dynamo will take on the Columbus Crew in the CONCACAF Champions Cup at Lower.com Field. The Dynamo are now all the way in Columbus right now. The first leg, 1-0, went to the Crew. The Romanian, Matan, who, you know, it took him a while to grow into this league, Matan. But he got the goal for the Crew in stoppage time. I heard a lot of Dynamo fans, oh, we always give up late goals. How can this happen? You know what? You score two or three goals in regulation, you're not worrying about that. And to me, the big question still remains scoring goals. It was the big question going into the season last year. It's the big question at this point, and they're going to have to score goals in Columbus tomorrow night. 5 o'clock Central Time. We get an early show. It's going to be nice. Lower.com Field, it's a big challenge. It's going to be a bigger crowd there for the Crew. They're the defending MLS Cup champions, the CONCACAF Champions Cup. I don't know why it doesn't draw better here and even in other markets. It'll draw better in Columbus. This is an opportunity to win this tournament, to go to the FIFA Club World Cup. Dynamo got a much-needed break on the weekend in MLS play. Columbus did play. They had to play against Chicago. They knocked off Chicago 2-1. They got goals from Russell Rowe and a stoppage time goal from Farsi to beat the Chicago Fire. Almost said Chicago Red Stars. That's NWSL. Shaqiri playing for Chicago. Chicago may be a little bit improved this year. But a great opportunity for the Dynamo to still advance. It's a big challenge. It'll come ahead of the Dynamo Portland in MLS play. But we're going to leave the Portland game alone because we'll talk about that on Wednesday. A lot of good matchups in this. A lot going on here for the Dynamo. They have had their early season challenges. I don't think there's any question. And you do have to give them that. On the other hand, they really have not addressed the striker position, and I think their addressing of it was Sebas Ferreira, who then had a hamstring injury. So here's Ben Olsen on the performance of the team thus far, considering, you know, the injury situation mainly, I think.
You failed to mention that we advanced in CONCACAF and beat St. Louis to get here. It's funny how people quickly shape things. And when we take emotion out of this, we've been playing in the way that we've wanted to go about it. And it's nice to see that even with some of the injuries and new players coming in, we've quickly picked up, had plenty of opportunities to win each game. So really the message is just keep rolling and fine tune some of the little things, and also kind of make the plays that matter. Still some turnovers have cost us this year and some set pieces. So a lot of that is important, and we need to dial figure some of that stuff out. But overall, there's a lot more positives than negatives right now. Again, going into the round of 16 and getting through one matchup. And again, the two home games were against tough opposition, and we found ways to lose rather than find ways to win.
Yeah, and again, the margins are slim because you're scoring less than a goal a game. That becomes still the big question. It's still a very good defending team. It's obviously missing Hector Herrera. Now, this was an interesting one. A reporter asked Ben Olsen about the mood in the locker room. I mean, what's the mood supposed to be like? It's early season. Everybody should be hungry. Everybody should be firing on all cylinders to get playing time. I thought it was a bit of a strange question. And I'm going to take the side of Ben Olsen on this 100%. You got to ask better questions. This is, you know, I mean, it's kind of like the mood in the locker room. What does that mean? You got to dial it in a little bit more. Maybe you want to ask about the midfield matchups, or, you know, maybe you want to say, Ben, do you feel like you're creating enough chances? They only had four shots on goal in the last game. You know, you got to ask these guys real questions. I kind of felt sorry for Ben Olsen here, and I can understand why he's a little fired up. The question is not a good one. You got to come in with good questions. And, you know, these guys got to jump in front of a mic all the time. So you got to, they want to be challenged, I think, with questions. So here's Ben Olsen answering the reporter's question about the mood in the locker room.
The mood's fine. Well, I don't understand the question. What do you mean is, well, how's the mood? We're excited. I mentioned that in the first part. We're excited to play a soccer game. We're down 1-0. We lost at home. All we have to do is win a soccer game here, albeit against a very, very good team and a good team at home. But it's a doable situation. So we're two games into the league. And in CONCACAF, we advanced past St. Louis. So, again, mood is fine. Mood is fine. My mood, not so much with all these questions. You want to talk about the game?
There you go. I like that. I like that. He had some humor at the end. Yeah, come with good questions. All right, so here's what we think the Dynamo, I think it'll look similar to the last game. Clark, Escobar, Mikhail Sviatchenko, that's Dorsey right back. That's your starting back four. That's a big, solid piece of your team, Artur in front of them. Now, the question for me, who's going to play next to Artur? You need goals on this night. Do you drop Coco a little bit deeper? Do you play Bossy and Kovalchuk? I think it's interesting. And then who's your striker? Aliu on the left, and then Siegel up front. I don't know. That's an interesting one. It's going to be interesting to see who the four set sort of in the box midfield and the attacking positions there are. I mean, we know it's Artur, but does Gregush get another start? Brooklyn Reigns, do you play him higher up the field with Coco deeper? Or is it time just to play Bossy and Kovalchuk? I think there's some really interesting combinations that could potentially happen. But you do have to have a team that's, you know, you're going to have to score goals there. You're going to have to get more than four shots on goal. And I think for Columbus and Wilfried Nancy, they come off a weekend where they made five changes. So they've been mixing and matching. And I think you're likely going to see Cucho Hernandez start. Rossi will definitely start. I think the wide areas is the place you look for change. Does Arfston and Yeboah start? Zawadzki, Farsi, you know, the wide areas are big for them because they love to pull you over to one side of the field, play a lot of little tight balls, draw you over, and hit the big switch. I mean, I'm basically describing a lot of teams, but they're good at it. They're good at it. And this kid, Aiden Morris, boy, for a local kid, man, he has really grown. Him and Nagby, what a combination. You got Rossi coming back from Turkey, and if you got Hernandez out there, you got a real killer up front, a guy that doesn't need four chances to score a goal. No question. So this is going to be a good game. I'm looking forward to this one. Jan Gregush had something to say about the Columbus Crew and the second leg. Here's what he had to say.
We know our job. And like Ben said, it's start of the season. We are in position that we want to be in. We still can go through. We are in. We have everything in our hands. So we are positive and excited. So we've been here before with against St. Louis when we lost the first game and came back victorious. So we definitely have a strong squad. We know what we want, and we try to stay positive and approach the game like this. And yeah, like you said, okay, they scored last winners, but yeah, we are here to win the game, and that's it.
So that was Jan Gregoš. The Dynamo picked him up. You remember Pat Onstad, once they had the injury problem, they quickly made a signing of Gregoš, who's played at Real Salt Lake in Minnesota. This is big tomorrow at 5 o'clock. I really would love to see the Dynamo advance in this and get to the round of eight, and there'll be a bunch of matches tomorrow. Let's go back to the first leg here. Here's the game-winning goal. This came in stoppage time. Matan hits it.
There's something really special here. Morris squares. Matan. Matan! Columbus at the death has their goal on the road.
So, yeah, that was kind of a killer there for the Dynamo, that road goal. And in the end, it led to conversation from a lot of people. But, you know, look, goals can take pressure off you. Goals can win you games you don't deserve to win. That still remains the big, big question. So you got the Dynamo Columbus, then you've got Philadelphia and Pachuca. And that one will be the second game tomorrow night. You got Tigres Orlando. You've got Robin Hood of Suriname against Herediano of Costa Rica. You got Inter Miami then. Robin Hood and Herediano of Costa Rica, that game is Wednesday. Inter Miami and Nashville. Probably Inter Miami looking to get Lionel Messi out. He sat out their last game. Club America, Guadalajara, Chivas, 3-1 aggregate right now for America. Alajuelense and the New England Revolution, and then Monterrey and Cincinnati. Brandon Vasquez, the big story in the first leg in that one, comes back to Cincinnati, his former team. He gets the only goal. I would say it was a goalkeeping error, but doesn't matter. That said, he did get the goal. Okay, quick word here. Just want to give you a shout out about one of our newest sponsors. It's Pitch 25. Get down there. Got an indoor soccer setup down there. Great spot. Pitch 25. You watch the Copa America there. You watch the Euros there. People have watched World Cups there. Fantastic. Fantastic venue. Huge, too. And I know a lot of the Dynamo fans go there ahead of time. Pitch 25 is just a phenomenal spot down there in Edo with over 100 beer selections. Pitch 25. Hugh O'Connor's Pub out on I-10. By the way, they're going to have a great, great St. Patrick's Day party. Hugh O'Connor's I-10 Marquee Entertainment Center. Get out there. Great whiskey offerings, great beer offerings. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, and they'll have a lot of special things going on St. Patrick's Day. Wear that green. And Wednesday I'm going to announce something that'll kind of be around the St. Patrick's Day theme. Kick Cancer Soccer Clinic, it's coming up. It's only $50. You get a Capelli t-shirt, 3 to 5 o'clock, the 17th at Dias Park. Kick Cancer Soccer Clinic, we need you out there. Driven.net, the Driven.net. You go to events, click on it, sign up. There are sign-ups coming in now. We're loving it. And the 25 member clubs of the United Soccer Club League, these are all youth clubs, 25 members plus, have endorsed this clinic. This is grassroots. This is your soccer community at work. Support us. We'll take a break. Coming up to talk Nottingham Forest, Gio Reyna, Matt Turner is the Nottingham Post. Sarah Clapham joins us next.
Next day it went higher. All I make it a fire.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. We're going to end it up here tonight in real style. Before we get to our next guest, did you ever want to experience the closest thing to a live match? Well, if you do, you go down to Pitch 25, the largest soccer beer garden in Houston. It's the place for you. They've got over 70 screens, 100 beers on tap. Plus, they got an indoor soccer field. There's people playing in there all the time. Pitch 25, the ultimate fan destination for Copa America, the Euros coming up this summer, and, of course, World Cup qualifying. Head over there. It's 2120 Walker and Edo, right near Shell Energy Stadium. Houston's go-to soccer bar is Pitch 25. We got a special guest. Sarah Clapson is the Nottingham Forest reporter for the Nottingham Post, Nottinghamshire Live, Nottinghamshire Live. And Sarah joins us now from England. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It's a bit of a mouthful, that title. So, yeah, we should make it simpler for everybody.
Well, I got the Nottingham Forest part right and your name, which is always a good start. You know, one thing I wanted to point out to people here in the States, you know, we have a lot of very new fans to the Premier League. And, you know, Nottingham Forest is totally ingrained in the community. I remember when they came here in the 80s after they won that was a European Cup then, now the Champions League. You probably weren't even born at that point. Their stadium, their ground, and the club, 1865. It really is remarkable how community-based and emotions are tied in to Nottingham Forest. If you could just kind of address that a little bit.
Of course, yeah. It's such a club with a rich history, Forest. Obviously, you talked about the European Cups, but going further back as well, the Brian Clough days were obviously the high point, and he is still such a big figure. Obviously, sadly, no longer with us, but his presence is still there. It's still so ingrained in the club and the city as well. You mentioned about it being ingrained in the community, and it really is. When you walk to the City Ground on a match day, you have a real iconic walk over Trent Bridge going through the city. And it's just such a big part of people's lives. Fans have such a tradition going to match days and meeting up with friends and experiencing all the atmosphere and everything around it. It's just, you kind of get goosebumps when you go into matches sometimes. I still do, because it's such a special moment, and it's so bigger part of people's lives. And obviously Forest fans have experienced a lot of ups and downs and real roller coaster over the years, recent years particularly. For so long they were a sleeping giant, not in the Premier League, out of the Premier League for a couple of decades, got back in there, and that just really ignited another spark in the fan base and the community in the city, because it's such at the heart of it, Forest. It's a really big part of Nottingham and the surrounding area.
Sarah Clapson joining us, Nottingham Post and Embedded. You know, one of the things we always talk about over here, I certainly talk about it, is we don't have the healthy pressure that the Premier League has. it's a little bit more leaning towards, you know, a little bit of a love fest. We don't have that intensity and pressure. I'm just wondering, from your perspective as a writer for, you know, we would call it a beat writer for Nottingham Forest, meaning you're on it every day.
Yeah.
You must feel a sense of pressure personally, and I'm sure you get all kinds of feedback, both positive and negative, every time you write an article.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can kind of sense, you really get a sense of when things are going well and when things are not so going well. And you're right. The whole pressure situation around relegation and promotion, it just adds that extra layer. You can really feel the tension, particularly at this stage of a season in the Premier League, when Forest have got 10 games left. There's so much riding on them. There's so much at stake. And you kind of, when you cover a club for a period of time, you get to know the people, you get to know the fans, you get to know not just the players and the coaches, but the people in and around the stadium, the people that are there every day. And you just understand what it means, what promotion, what relegation means, and how it affects fans, how it affects the people that are employed at the club, the players. You can really sense at this time of a season that there's so much at stake. And it's exciting, I guess, that there's so much in the balance. There's still so much to be decided. But yeah, you really get that sense of nervous tension at times.
Nottingham Forest currently 17th. They're one spot above the relegation zone, 6-6-16, 24 points. Looks like it's going to be likely a battle between you and Luton Town. I want to get to some of the American players because these are two U.S. internationals that right now are not contributing a whole lot. Let's start with Gio Reyna. He's only played 39 minutes. Can you give us the latest update really around his situation, what the fans think of him, what Nuno Espirito Santo is saying about him? Because there's nobody closer to this than you.
Yeah, I think he's been a little bit unfortunate, Gio Reyna. He's got an injury at the moment, so he hasn't been in the match squad for the last couple of games. We don't think it's anything serious, so hopefully he'll be back soon and he'll be available again. But he's had a really tough time to get into the starting lineup. He's got players ahead of him who are keeping him out at the moment and players who have been performing well. The fact he can play in a few different positions, is that versatility is really useful, and it will help get him more minutes. But just pushing into that starting 11 is really difficult. It's always tough when you come into a new club in January, because you're coming in the middle of the season. He's come to a club that are fighting for survival, that need points, need results, need performances. And he has been a little bit unlucky. I think fans would probably like to see a little bit more of him. When he has played, he's generally looked quite bright. He's looked good on the ball. He's looked lively. He's looked eager to get involved. Hasn't lacked confidence. He just hasn't really had that opportunity to get going, to build momentum, to find his rhythm. When you're coming off the bench for a few minutes here and there, it's difficult to make an impact. And sometimes I think players in that situation, they can be trying a bit too much. They're so eager to stand out and to catch the manager's eye, and they know that they've only got a few minutes to do that, and sometimes that brings its own pressure. So I feel for him a little bit in that sense, but he's got his work cut out to get into the starting lineup at the minute. That number 10 role, I think, is his favoured position. At the minute, Forest have got Morgan Gibbs-White, who is really, really at the heart of their attacking play, and he's near enough one of the first names on the team sheet usually. So getting into that position is going to be tough. Obviously, Gio Reyna can play out wide as well. Again, in those positions, Forest have got players Anthony Elanga, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Divock Origi. They've been doing really well. So it is difficult for him. Nuno has said that he's been doing well in training, that he's working hard, that he's when he's fit, obviously, he's doing his best to adapt. And I think the manager is understanding that that takes time, that you don't just come into a team and very rarely do you hit the ground running and you quickly adapt. He's still young as well. I think all of that is a factor that the manager takes into account. All Gio Reyna can do is keep plugging away, keep trying his best in training, and hope that when he does get a chance, he takes it, because that's the key. When you get an opportunity, you have to grasp it with both hands and really show what you can do. I don't think there's any doubt about his talent. It's just getting the opportunity to show it, which is difficult.
Sarah Clapson joining us, Nottingham Post. She's the Nottingham Forest reporter, really embedded. That's a good take on Gio Reyna. The way we positioned it over here was this could be a sink or swim for him, because he's going from an elite team in the Bundesliga, Dortmund, always around the top of the table. And now he's coming to an uncomfortable place, to your point, fighting for relegation. We kind of saw it as a character examination, because that's one of the things here in the States that does get questioned. There's no doubt he has talent, but everybody's wondering about the character side of it. Now, I know it takes time for him to get involved, but he was brought there to make things happen and help you guys avoid relegation, right? This isn't, he may be on his way back to Dortmund at the end of this. So for now, this can't really be positioned, or can it, a success?
I think at the minute, the jury is probably still out. Forrest definitely haven't seen the best of him. They haven't really seen what he's about. And you're right, in terms of character, this is a really tough position to come into. And all right, when he came, it wasn't quite, Forrest still had a lot of games left. They were still a little bit better off, I guess, than they are now, in the sense that you're getting to that point where time's running out. But It's still difficult, I think, to judge what kind of impact he can have and what he can do, because we haven't really seen it. We haven't really seen what kind of character he is. We haven't seen whether he can dig in these kind of games and scrap and fight. And if he's up for that kind of challenge, he just hasn't had the opportunity to show that. I guess behind the scenes, the manager will see in training what his attitude is like, what his influence is like. I think it is difficult for him. At the minute, it's just a case of working his way in and, yeah, impressing where he can, trying to catch the manager's eye and showing that he's up for the fight, because that's what Forest need at the moment. They need players that can fight, that aren't shying away from the pressure and the tension and the situation that they're in. That they need players that can embrace it, that can really step up and be counted. And I guess over the next few weeks, we'll see really where Gio Reyna falls into that, because it's difficult to say at the moment.
And Sarah, that was one of the big things I thought about. Listen, we all know he's gifted. We know he can lay on a final ball. It's without the ball is what I was worried about, right? In a league where the tempo is so much faster. And you just said it. You're fighting, scratching, and clawing for survival right now. And I'm not sure he's that kind of fit. And I hope he gets healthy so that he can contribute and show us, because I think that's kind of what a lot of the fans here in the States are expecting from him. All right, let's go to Matt Turner, who kind of shot to glory here in the U.S. with the national team with performances. Tell us where he is now in the scheme of the goalkeeping. Obviously, he didn't play against Brighton in the 1-0 loss.
Yeah, so he finds himself second choice at the moment for the league games. He was in the starting 11 for the cup games. I think the manager kind of thought that Matt Turner had done, or that he deserved a chance in the cup games. Forest are out of that now, so unfortunately it looks like he's probably going to be on the bench for the rest of the league games this season. Again, I do feel for him a little bit, because he's such a great guy, Matt Turner. You really want him to do well, because he's so lovely to talk to. You can see what kind of character and personality he is. I think he said himself that when he gets setbacks, he just picks himself up and gets on with it, and he's really shown that. It's just he's had a bit of a tough time in games. Again, Forest are in such a difficult position that they need players that can make a difference. Unfortunately for Matt Turner, he conceded a few bad goals. He had a few difficult games. His kicking was an area that Forest identified as needing work. They brought another goalkeeper in January, and that just meant that he found himself on the bench, unfortunately. I think they still see him as a goalkeeper who needs a bit of work, but has something there. I think he does have something there. He's a really good shot stopper. I have to say, he can make some really good saves, and he has shown that. He's just got areas of his game that he needs to develop. And again, that probably takes a bit of time, needs a bit of working on. The situation Forest are in, they don't really have that. They wanted a goalkeeper that could come in and perhaps had that little bit more experience and a little bit more know-how in situations. It's tough for Matt Turner. I really do feel for him. I think he'll take it in the right way. That's certainly what the manager has said, that he's taken that on board, that he's reacted and responded in the way that you'd want him to. I think goalkeepers are such it's such a specialised position anyway, and they're so different characters, I think, to general outfield players. They're always a certain type goalkeepers, and they have this really tight-knit squad, real tight-knit unit. They call it the goalkeepers union, obviously, and they all seem to want each other to do well, even though they're fighting for the same position. I think his attitude in training, from what we're told, has been good. He wants to help his teammates do well. You can see him on the touchline sometimes, and he looks like he cares. He looks like he really wants the team to do well. I think that says a lot about his character. He's just a good guy. He's just been a bit unlucky.
Yeah, he's very genuine. You get that sense. That was interesting you said that, because I think we all feel the same way here, and we're always rooting for him. We're talking to Sarah Clapson. Sarah, quickly give us your Twitter handle so that people know what it is, because I'd like them to follow you.
Oh, that's kind. It's @Sarah_Clapson.
@Sarah_Clapson. Okay, so he's behind Matt Sells. In you got four goalkeepers on the roster. Is he clearly the number two, would you say?
Yeah, he's been on the bench since Matt Sells came in, and he started the cup game. So I think he is ahead of the others at the moment in terms of that number two spot, the backup spot. It's just that Matt Sells is the clear number one. And I don't see that changing between now and the end of the season. You want a goalkeeper to keep their position. And that's why Forrest made the change in, or made the decision to bring somebody in January. They've got behind him. They'll stick with Matt Sells. And Matt Turner's there if needed, because you never know. That's the big thing, I guess. You always get the possibility of injuries or suspensions or anything that can crop up. So you need your number two to always be ready. And I think he's the kind of person that will be. He'll be there if needed.
Sarah, I saw something interesting. Mark Clattenburg is the club's referee analyst. So right. Is this a new position? Do all the Premier League teams have this? Is this somebody that goes over? I mean, what is the role of that person? Obviously, it's to talk about the controversial moments in games. But what are they? What is that role? Maybe define it.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't probably know. they only brought him in a few weeks ago, and it is very new. They are the first Premier League club to do it. I think now that Forest have opened that door, other clubs will probably think, oh, hang on a minute, they might be onto something. We'll maybe look at that.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
If it runs through the Premier League, you guys are going to get credit for starting it.
Well, credit or stick, one way or another. Yeah, I'm not sure which way it'll go at the minute. But I think it's something that teams in Europe have. But in the Premier League, it's not really been done before. Forest have had a lot of decisions gone against them. They've been on the wrong end of a lot of refereeing bad calls, VAR calls that haven't gone their way. They feel this real sense of injustice. They've been really infuriated by some of them, absolutely seething. Mark Clattenburg's role is kind of to smooth relations a little bit with the refereeing body. Forest have made a few official complaints. And I think they just want to have that link, somebody there who can act as a go-between, act as a bit of an explainer and try and put the club's point of view across, but also, I guess, try to say, look, this is why this has been done, or this is why this is a good moment to maybe make your point, or maybe not a good moment to make your point. That's kind of what he's there for. He also prepares packages ahead of games, so he'll look at the officiating team, who the referee is, what his kind of tendencies are, whether he's a referee that hands out yellow cards easily, whether he's somebody that's a bit lenient in certain situations.
Maybe the definition of what a foul is in that referee's mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Different. Yeah. So that's his kind of job as well, to do all that side of things. We actually got to speak to him for the first time the other week. The club put him forward to explain or say why a decision that was made by a referee against Liverpool was wrong, which was really, really good, because he obviously has a great knowledge of the laws of the game, where perhaps people like me and the fans don't. So that was really helpful. And I guess he does the same with the players and the manager as well. He'll kind of try to say where he can, this decision should have gone this way, or this decision should have gone that way. It's a funny role, and I think probably we still don't really know what it fully involves, because it's so new, and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing or not, I think the jury is probably still out on that as well, because Forest are still getting bad decisions go against them, so it obviously hasn't changed anything in that sense. I guess we'll only really be able to say at the end of the season whether they stay up or not, or whether they start getting decisions that they feel are the right ones, then you might be able to say, oh, well, it was a good appointment, or maybe it didn't work out. It's something that I think in the fullness of time we'll be able to look at and judge properly.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Nuno Espirito Santo has been very vocal about some of the calls, and the margins are slim. Now we're hiring referee analysts. Well, listen, I've really enjoyed this. You know, I'd love to bring you on another time to talk strictly about the role of you as a reporter in the Premier League, the intensity of it, all the things that come along with it. I think it would be a fascinating interview for my listeners if down the road we could do that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
All right. I got you on record, Sarah. Right. you're coming back. You're coming back for a return. Listen, thank you so much. All the best. And let's hope that Nottingham Forest stays up in the Premier League. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. So that's Sarah Clapson there, Nottingham Forest reporter for Nottingham Post, Nottinghamshire Live. That's great stuff there. I want to get her back on again because that would be amazing to talk about just her role embedded and how much access she has and all the interesting things I think that come along with that. That does it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. By the way, don't forget the Kick Cancer Soccer Clinic. It's this Sunday. You sign up at driven.net, only $50. You get a T-shirt courtesy of Capelli. Plus, all the proceeds go to the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation, LamontBrands.com for your Soccer Matters T-shirts and hats. All proceeds also go to the Snowdrop Foundation. For Guillermo Lazo Romero, I'm Glenn Davis. Until next, until this Wednesday at 6 Central Time, remember, soccer matters.